This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We move on to this story, looking at the constitutionality of remaining in a state of disaster. And an organization calling itself Dear South Africa has written to the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Minister Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, around the constitutionality around the disaster management, the state of disaster being continued. Remember that when we started off, it was 21 days. 7 months later, it's still there. But then the question is also about should it really remain in place? And also referring to the debate that was happening last night, the presidential debate in the USA, and Donald Trump arguing that you cannot keep the country closed because people are losing their jobs. I get the sense that while here in SA, it doesn't really feel that the country is closed, but there are certain industries that have been affected and continue to be affected. And also the corridors that have been closed down from certain countries. And then there is also the warning that's coming from the Ministry of Health of a second wave. But we'll be in conversation now with Rob Hutchinson, who is the CEO of Dear South Africa. We'll be taking your tweets as well at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. What's your take around us remaining under a state of disaster? Your calls on 0861-987-000. Rob, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Aldrin. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for making time for us as well. What's at the core of this of the argument that you're making with the minister?
Basically, it is pretty much what you said there, the testing the constitutionality of the ongoing extensions of the Disaster Management Act. And we have to look at, right at the beginning, the circumstances around why it was declared. Well, we're mainly because we didn't know, we didn't have enough data surrounding the virus, the infection rate, what the treatments were and so on. Yet here, during the past 7 months of the lockdown, we have gained substantial knowledge as to what the mitigating factors are and how to deal with it and how to handle it and so on. We've had time to prepare our healthcare facilities and many other factors to deal with the virus. The public has been educated and so on. So the question arises is why are we going through these extensions of the lockdown? When we have prepared, we have more data, we have more information to counteract that effect. And we've seen a decline in infections and a drastic decline in associated deaths. So that's the basis of our question. We want to see the evidence that is aligned for this extension, and we want the minister to provide the valid and just reasons as to why she's extending it. If she can't provide that, then we will challenge that in court if needs be.
It's almost like, Rob, we forgot that the reason we were given at the time that we're going into the lockdown was that so that we can try and make sure that we have our health facilities equipped to respond to a crisis, indeed, when there is a heightened tension as well and the need for these hospital beds and so forth. And we've been told that these facilities have now been equipped. But then, as you rightfully put it, then why are we remaining under lockdown?
Absolutely. That was the exact reason for the initial 21 days, exactly expressed by President Cyril Ramaphosa. The lockdown was to prepare the healthcare facilities. It was never intended to stop the virus because you can't actually stop a virus. You know, you can't stop the inevitable spread of the virus. The virus is inevitable as such. And you know, preparing the healthcare facilities was definitely the way to go. And the first 21 days was to do that. Clearly, government has failed in that sense where the healthcare facilities weren't prepared in those first 21 days, and they were then posed with another three-month extension on top of that. Now we've seen field hospitals being built, and we've seen these facilities also initially were well attended. However, now they've also gone down, and the attendance, I think, at the Nazareth one was about 5% at that stage, or five. There were only five admissions at that stage.
And the, what would you then make of the argument that, and I know this is an old one, even I'm battling with this one. Remember that we were once told that we're trying to flatten the curve, you know? And I don't know whether we're still at trying to flatten the curve, and I don't know what curve it is that we're trying to flatten. But then we're also being told there is the threat of a second wave. But even the threat of a second wave, if you have your health facilities all equipped, what threat is really there?
Yeah, that's the golden question that I would have to say is, well, what was the curve in the first place? So the curve was based on models that and projections that had been put forward by various institutions, various actuarial societies, and so on. And they projected major spikes and a huge amount of deaths. So one projection was over 50,000 deaths in South Africa, and 40. Then they dropped it down and amended it to 40,000 deaths. And so that curve was what they were hoping to. It was a projection, not of actual cases, but the projection that they wanted to flatten. Then along came the reality, which hardly showed any spike at all. It was pretty flat from day one. So there, if you base it on that, and that's not just locally, that was globally. We've seen it was way below what the projections were. So there was no need to flatten that A curve, which really didn't exist in the first place. As far as the second wave is concerned, you're absolutely correct. We have prepared the healthcare facilities. There are, in fact, most of them, the emergency healthcare facilities are standing vacant right now. So there is definitely capacity. And the concern in the beginning was that our current healthcare facilities would be overwhelmed with the amount of COVID patients coming that were supposed to have come in. Well, that really didn't happen. None of the healthcare facilities were overloaded in any way whatsoever. So there again, we are prepared for a supposed second wave if it happens. And if we have to look at international models and experience from other places in the world, we see that there certainly isn't a second wave approaching, not at all.
Okay. So we're going to go to the power line on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Alderan St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. So just quickly, Rob, before I go to the power line, what is it that you think is at risk if we continue to go on with the lockdown and we continue with this extension?
Well, definitely the economy. And it's not just the economy that's at risk, it's people's lives that are at risk as far as TB patients and HIV patients and cancer patients aren't going to hospitals to attend their regular treatment. We've got evidence of that. Mm-hmm. So there's that healthcare risk, which is going to pose an extra burden on the healthcare facilities at a later date. We've lost 2.2 million jobs in the past, in the last quarter alone. So it's a definite concern. Our major concern is that the measures taken against this virus are causing far more damage than the virus itself.
Yeah, okay. So 0861-987-000, your tweets at Alderan St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Lawrence, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. How are you?
Good, Lawrence.
It's quite interesting what David Mabuza said yesterday in Parliament question and answer session. Mm-hmm. He said that we were caught with our pants down with regards to corruption. Now, there are two readings that you must read from that statement. It's either indeed they were notoriously incompetent, like we know that this government is notoriously incompetent, or they strategically put it that they were aligned themselves to steal. So this government is just perpetuating fear mongering. There is nothing like a second wave that is going to come. They are just instilling.
Sorry, Lawrence, there's something that's blowing into your mouthpiece there.
I'm saying this government is perpetuating fear mongering. It is notoriously incompetent. They cannot police any bylaws. They cannot police anything. Now they are telling us that there is a second wave. It has lost all credibility and all legitimacy. What is the second wave going to do more than the first wave or the 50,000 deaths that they mispredicted and now they're blaming on the modeling that was incorrect?
No, they're actually saying that the reason that we have such a low death rate is because of these extraordinary measures that we've put in place?
What extraordinary measures when the health system is broken down? It is because of a thing that, Mesha put it correctly. This government botched this whole thing. They were just helped because in Africa as a whole, this thing was not just not because of the health system. The health system is broken, Saint-Pierre. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that it has taken an extraordinary turn on itself, this virus, that they themselves should investigate. But instead of doing that, they are trying to fearmonger and they're trying to have a handle on this thing that they are not controlling. They've botched everything. People have lost their jobs. The economy is on its ICU, is down on its knees, and now they are perpetuating from fear-mongering because they want to have handle on the economy and perpetuate stealing, and they want to do all these things. Mm-hmm. Just that they can put the wool on top of our faces.
Okay. Rob, your take on that?
Look, I have to agree. I think it is gross incompetence by government. And for them to come now and say that it was extraordinary measures that allowed for such a low death rate, I have to argue. If we look at other diseases such as TB and normal influenza and AIDS, their death rates there far exceed what COVID has produced. Interesting enough, I think TB kills around 300 South Africans per day. And AIDS kills another 300 South Africans per day. Why didn't we see any measures taken against that? Well, we don't know. And if you look at normal influenza, the influenza figures are pretty much in line with the current COVID figures. Last year, around between 16 and 20,000 South Africans died from normal influenza, the common flu. And it's exactly where we are today on the COVID, 18,000. Okay. It's exactly the same.
For some strange reason, I was telling my colleague now as well that I'm not a fan of Trump, but listening into the debate yesterday, at some point, I was like, he makes a point, and as cold as it might sound, he's right in that we must learn to live with the virus, and that is what we were told. We were never the intention of the lockdown or any other lockdown in any country was never to say that we will remain under lockdown up until we get a vaccine. We were never told that. We were told that just get your systems ready.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and that is, we must keep our eye on that at all times. The intention of the lockdown was to prepare ourselves. And then our President Cyril Ramaphosa actually said that. Mm-hmm. This is the new normal, as he called it. We must learn to live with the virus and so on. It's not going to go away. It's our invisible enemy. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, any virus is. And we learn to live with them as we have for many, many years.
Yeah.
As far as vaccines are concerned, well, I don't see the reason why we need a vaccine when the fatality rate of this virus is at between 0.2 and 0.5%, depending on where you look. Majority of people, and we're talking 98-99% of people, have recovered without any medical assistance or anything else.
Yep.
Therefore, what is the point of a vaccine? It's completely unnecessary.
Okay. Tsepo, good morning.
Morning, Adrian. How are you?
Good, Tsepo.
Good. Adrian, I hear the issue of the lockdown issue that has been prolonged and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's a tendency in South Africa, that you have organization mushrooming everywhere, and then all of a sudden they're taking the government to court. And at some point, now I believe that we should appreciate the fact that there was a proactive approach towards the pandemic in South Africa. That is why we ended up where we are now. Because now, if it was not through that, the proactive action that was taken by the government, we're not sure exactly where we would have been in terms of the death, in terms of the infections and all that. We would have not
That's true.
Maybe not been where we are today. But I'm saying, then go and say, let us take the government to court and then justify the issue of why are we still in lockdown, becomes a problematic to me.
Also,
instead, we should be saying, because Adrian, look, we still have infections that are coming out. I am not saying that we should not question these things, but let's find a way of approaching government rather than fighting. Let's advise.
But they did. Rob says that a letter was sent to the minister, right, Rob? Tepo,
yes,
please hold on. Don't drop.
Yes, that's right. Tepo raises some very interesting points there. Some very valid points. I agree. However, we've got to look at. In the beginning, nobody knew anything about this virus, and we were all for the lockdown. We agreed that we must have a lockdown. We don't know what's coming. We don't know the dangers involved, and we welcome the lockdown. But our organization, PSA Africa, actually works alongside governments in most of our projects, so we don't generally fight governments. Mm-hmm. However, we rely on data, and the data is now showing that we've handled the lockdown. The peak was in August. And we are well over the peak now. We've seen a drastic reduction in everything else. What we are questioning is not the lockdown itself, but the continued extension of the lockdown. There's no need for, in our view, no need to extend the lockdown anymore.
Okay, what do you say to that, Tabo?
Okay. No, I get the point of, the extension of the lockdown, which I believe also the extension, we should have had something because it was until the 15th of October, if I'm not mistaken. And then and now it still continues. Mm-hmm. That's the question that we need to ask, you see. But at the same time, we understand the corruption that took place and all that. But we should at some point say to ourselves, let's give a tap on the government for containing the virus and then continuously making sure that they do take care of, the
but you also need to, you also, as Rob was saying, you also need to then raise the flag and say, isn't this a bit of an overindulgence?
True that, because we're looking at the, most of the SMMEs are suffering.
Yes,
when
exactly.
And then we cannot run away from that fact. Secondly, we've got, unemployment rate that is now high, skyrocket, and then we need to find ways of coming back to our new normal or our normal life and then see how get the economy running again and then having all the relevant stakeholders play their part into this. Yeah. And then now what I would urge also with Rob is that let's find the mechanism of trying to resuscitate our economy.
Yes.
To assist the government to make sure that at least, we are giving the government something as a tool to work towards improving, the economic status of this country. And then in that case, I'll applaud them for that. But let's also make sure, I agree 100% that let's raise the flag in terms of the duration of the lockdown, which is more critical, But at the same time, let's come with solutions. Mm-hmm. Or, ideas on making sure that how we then move forward as a country in making sure that we assist the government.
Thank you so much for that, Tepo. And Rob, what are some of those ideas that you have?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. That's a very, very valid point. Look, the only way to resuscitate the economy is going to be through the SMMEs, which, like Tepo says, they do drive the economy. Mm. It's not the big corporates and so on that drive the South African economy, but more the informal and small to medium enterprises. So we need to lift the restrictions that have been placed on them, allow them to trade, allow them to travel, allow them to produce and then add to the economy. And that can only be done if the state of disaster is lifted in its entirety. Because the regulations that are imposed solely by the minister under the state of disaster can immediately be lifted to level 5 or level 4 or any other level that she wants to, which will shut down the economy again. So the whole goal of this is to question the extension. If she can't validate it with proper data, then we say, end it. You cannot keep continuing with this, and let's get South Africa going again.
Mandla, good morning.
Yes, how are you, Zander?
Good, man.
Good. For me, I guess, this hype about thousands and thousands of people who die in South Africa digging all those graves, For me, I guess we compared ourselves to European countries, forgetting the environment, that the climate are not the same. In Africa, when you look like in Tanzania, Tanzania, there was no lockdown at all, and there's no millions of people died in that country. So I'm saying we were too, in fact, we were inculcating the culture of fear, understanding that we had to take responsibility. And unfortunately, we had so many experts, you know, and I don't know where those experts were coming from. One of them, in fact, was not even a doctor. You know, the president told us that he's an expert. She's an expert, this woman.
Oh, yes.
She was not even a qualified doctor for that matter. And there were too many conspiracy theories, you know, around COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And the minister as well, Zweli Mkhize as well, did not help the situation. Because all the time, instead of telling us the truth, they were always instilling fear that we're going to die in numbers. And the village where I come from, the numbers, it's not a big village.
Okay.
The numbers. In fact, if you tell them about...
Okay, I need you to wrap the point quickly, Mandla.
They'll be telling you that they only see that on television.
Okay, then. Thank you so much, Mandla. Rob, just in closing, do you think that that the president, as well as the leader of cabinet, should also bear some responsibility around the extension of the state of disaster?
Look, absolutely, he should. I mean, we formed a whole advisory panel, filled up with various doctors, experts, scientists, and so on, and took advice from there and the actual panel that made the decisions, the MCCC, was also supposed to take advice from that. They've since abandoned that panel for unknown reasons, and they've since been taking their advice from who knows where. Is it the WHO, or is it just the minister himself making the decision? So I think definitely the president needs to step up here, realize what is happening to the country. It's not just COVID that's killing this country. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the reaction to different fires that is doing it. And I think the president and his cabinet need to self-reflect and perhaps admit they made a mistake, they overcalculated, they took too much precaution.
Okay, so what's the deadline for the minister to respond?
We've given the minister until the 30th of this month. Mm-hmm. And if she doesn't respond, then we will seek relief in court.
Okay, then thank you so much for that. That is Rob Hutchinson, the CEO of Dear South Africa.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.